Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That's what I'm talking about!
Like I said before,
who are you talking about when you say
that? You're not listening to what I just said.
Slow down, pal. Who are you talking about?
I don't get caught up in that.
Just because it's the bye doesn't mean you don't get a chance to win. 913-576-7610 is another edition of
Who Are You Talking About?
Andy Reid speaks in very general terms about everything but cheeseburgers.
Yes, he does.
And so he describes a player, coach, something in very vague terms. You just have to tell us who he's talking about. And you can win today $25 to the Ainsworth. Very, very simple game. 913-576-7610.
Andy only talked one time this week.
That's it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So if you listen to Andy and his one time that he talked, you have a pretty good shot of walking away with $25 at the Ainsworth. I hear tell they serve CBD cocktails.
Oh,
that could
really
be interesting.
All right, that's interesting.
All right, Mike and Raymore's up first. Mike.
Who are we talking about, Mike?
You did a nice job.
Oh, wow.
Wow, he did a nice job.
Let's go with Eric Fisher.
Eric Fisher did not do a nice job.
And as you know, the converse is always true. If he's not the person that he's talking about, then
he doesn't
that person,
think
yeah.
Eric Fisher did a nice job.
No, and I don't think Eric Fisher did a great job on Monday night either. As much as I like Eric Fisher and think he's a good lineman, he was a little rusty back into his debut, you know, for the beginning of the season.
Rex and Overbrook's up next. Rex.
Who are you talking about, Rex?
You did a nice job.
I was going to pick Eric Fisher, but I guess I'll go Pat Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes did not do a nice job on Monday night at all. He was okay.
Yeah.
Did a nice job with his feet.
Right. Passing is all right.
But Andy might have said he did a nice job. Well, the rest
sure.
Just go, he's okay.
He's all right. Yeah. Nothing.
Andy probably would have said nice job.
I think Patrick has set the bar at a different level for everybody now, right? Like, if he doesn't go out there and throw for 400 yards and five touchdowns,
yeah, it's boring.
Like,
that's
a boring game. I want to
see
Patrick light it up.
Darn
Let's
straight.
Go.
Darn straight I do. I feel almost guilty. I've been using the Chiefs in Madden, but I've created myself as a running back, and I give myself the ball all the time.
How do you do?
And really good.
Yeah.
Got a neck roll and a single face bar.
Oh, nice.
Mask. But it's like, what a waste of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I really only count on Pat Mahomes to come up on third down when I need him.
Like it's Guy Chapman,
it's like
aren't
a total
you?
Waste. I feel like that's the case. I want to see him throw for 450. I don't
Guy
see him
Chamberlain.
Throw for,
Guy Chamberlain Chaplin.
I don't want to see him
Charlie
throw for
Chaplin's brother, Guy.
A .188 and then
right.
run for 59 yards on third down when you need him. That's no fun.
No, that's Alex Smith. We had that.
Don't
didn't like
see
it.
That.
If they allowed
you
to put the leather helmet on, would you do it?
I would definitely do it.
But you know
definitely
what? It wins football games for you, man. You can win any way you can, and Patrick Mahomes showed that on Monday night.
Aaron's up next. Aaron.
Who are we talking about, Aaron?
You did a nice job.
Sammy Watkins
did not do a nice job.
Do I give a clue now? Let me give a clue. All right, let's give a clue. He was named to the all-rookie team as a rookie.
There you go.
It's kind of hard to get named a second-year player.
Yeah. He's a third-year guy on the all-rookie team. Steven's up next. Steven.
Who are you talking about?
You did a nice job.
Tyrann Mathieu.
You're right. It is. Very good. What gave it away?
The rookie thing.
Seriously?
All rookie team.
Really? Wow. All right. Very good. Nicely done.
Too easy a clue, Fesco, I guess.
I guess, man. I could have said he was out passing out turkeys last night, had the opportunity to be with Tyrann last night at the two different events, actually. But the turkey drop that he did last night, man, I'm going to tell you something. This kid has opened my eyes in the last couple of weeks for what goes on here in Kansas City and what he's been able to do in Kansas City through his foundation and me being able to be part of his foundation board and seeing, you know, what goes on. And last night for me was a big-time eye-opening moment. We went to a place to drop off meals for folks who are needy at the holiday times, and it was a church on the east side of town, and we went over there, and you know the parishioners were at the church, and you just don't realize how many people in this town and really everywhere are in need. You know, not just the holiday season, but all the time. And that he had 320 meals that he was providing yesterday through harvesters who do a great job as well. And, you know, we passed out the turkeys, and not just the turkeys, but the entire meals, desserts, you know, everything that goes along with a Thanksgiving meal. And to just kind of be part of that and to have, like, you know, the moment to see how many people are in need and how just one individual is helping so many people in Kansas City. Like, I can't stress enough how lucky Kansas City is to have Tyrann Mathieu as a human being here in town, because he does embody what a lot of us do here in Kansas City, and that's try to make life better for everybody else. And Tyrann Mathieu has done a great job of that in his, what, 6 months here that he's been in Kansas City. He's really hit the ground running and is already making the difference in lives of a lot of people, buying computers and laptops and technology for students here in Kansas City, and feeding 320 families just yesterday alone, and countless other ways that he's helping and will help once the Christmas holiday season rolls into full effect. I mean, like, if everybody could be as generous and as giving, as caring as Tyrann Mathieu is, man, we'd be in a great place. And I think he's been a very nice player for the Chiefs, but he's been better off the field than anybody could have ever imagined. And watching him, you know, do his thing last night and help these families out, and see how grateful families are when they can get a meal at this time of year is just, it's just remarkable. So I can't say enough good things about Tyrann Mathieu and the way that he's gone about his business since coming here to Kansas City. Awesome guy, man. Awesome guy.
Certainly a weird story continues, and Myles Garrett had his appeal hearing Wednesday in New York, and then yesterday came out and they said suspension upheld. He will be suspended for the remainder of the season, can meet with Goodell and apply for reinstatement. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the story takes another turn, because we've had the okay, was he provoked? He was apparently kicked in the junk by Mason Rudolph, right? Who then Mason Rudolph tried to grab his helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Then the reaction was, and we saw just the video portion of it, we saw then Myles Garrett ripped off his helmet and swung it at him.
Yeah.
Bad incident, right? We have all seen the incident, right? Yesterday, according to ESPN, Garrett alleged Rudolph directed a racial slur at him just prior to the brawl, sources told ESPN. Rudolph has since denied the accusation, his attorney releasing statements that he did not use a racial slur. NFL Films apparently did not have people mic'd up for this one.
Right. Why wouldn't you have them mic'd up for a Thursday night game?
I don't know.
Which is really bizarre.
I don't know. Or maybe it'll come out that they had some mics, but not directly there.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to then become a he said, he said.
Right.
Okay. The NFL supposedly investigated and claimed that Garrett's allegations are not true. Not found no such evidence, according to the NFL spokesperson Brian McCarthy. Said the league looked into Garrett's allegations and, quote, found no such evidence. Garrett stood by his allegations in a statement posted on his Twitter account. I don't know where I stand on that portion of it. All I know is, to me, you cannot levy false allegations in two avenues. One, rape and sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
The other, racial slurs.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
Right.
To me, you just can't. You can't go there if they're unfounded or there's a question, because it paints the other side something they may or may not be. I feel like those are the two of the most harmful allegations you can level on somebody without evidence.
Because those carry a lot of weight, and they carry a lot of, you know, even if they are false allegations, it carries a stigma with them for the rest of your lives that you've been painted as this, even though it may or may not be true.
So the difficult part here is there doesn't seem to be any evidence backing up Garrett's claim.
Right.
It's still not to say it didn't happen.
Sure.
Okay? But to levy those types of things, and then the timeline of Garrett is leaving a lot of people to question
well. Why didn't this come out right away? Why is it coming out after the appeal when you lost your appeal?
He apologized for his actions. He supposedly wrote a letter to Mason Rudolph. He apologized publicly. And then behind closed doors, this happened.
Correct. And then they interview Baker Mayfield yesterday, and Baker goes, this is the first I'm hearing this from you guys. You know, and he's a teammate inside that locker room, and this has been a week now where since this incident has happened, and we haven't heard anything about this. And I think a lot of people challenging the when it happened and when he brought this up. If this was something that he really believed in and was convicted in and wanted to let people know, he should have said that immediately after the game. And he had opportunities to say it after the game or even before the appeals process. Like, there was a lot of time where he could have brought this up and said, look, I was provoked. This guy was dropping racial slurs on me out there on the field. And I think if it would have happened right away, I think it would have had more credibility than just coming out now. And then there's no evidence to prove it. And now Mason Rudolph has got lawyers involved in all of this kind of stuff. Like,
for
this is getting
too,
ugly.
When they interviewed Browns players, they said, yeah, we didn't hear it
right
in the moment. And we're kind of surprised that it was only discussed now. But they all, to a man, said, I don't think Myles Garrett would lie about that.
Correct. Right. And that's their teammate. They're defending their teammate and whatnot. So you don't really know what side to believe. One side is going to say one thing. One side is going to say the other thing. The truth lies somewhere in the middle, just like it does with everything.
I find it hard to believe the NFL didn't have like a Parab mic, those big like
right.
bowl-looking microphones, sure. In case you don't know the lingo, like those big Parab mics. I find it hard to believe they couldn't pick up the sound from that.
Yeah, if there was like, sound available, you'd think they would have it.
Yeah, the mic guy is certainly turning towards the fight. So
I just think those types of allegations are so damaging, and they're serious, and they should be. If someone is raped or sexually assaulted, I feel like that's the same. Like, get them.
Yeah.
But I want those to, I want those to, those allegations to be true, mm-hmm. if they're levied.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with a racial slur. Very serious. Shouldn't happen.
Right.
Mason Rudolph says this, out.
Out. Gone.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. He should be suspended too.
But I want to make sure that he has said those before the allegations, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's the difficult slope with all of these types of things. It's like it kind of waters down the real allegations if you find out ones aren't necessarily, mm-hmm. don't hold water.
Yeah.
That's what makes it difficult.
Well, and then the NFL right away says there's no evidence of this. I mean, they look for evidence of it because if somebody's going to raise that allegation, you want to find it, and immediately you go to NFL Films. Who was mic'd up? What do we have? What do we have on this game that we can see if stuff like this was being said? And if they have evidence of it and you can hear him saying it, boom, he needs to be suspended for a very long time.
We'll chat with former Chiefs linebacker Joe Mays coming up at 8 o'clock. He drops by each and every Friday here on Fesco in the Morning. But no love for Pat. Next.
Fesco in the Morning.
Ryan's been working on his harmonica. It's coming along very nice.
Oh, this is very good, Ryan. Nicely done.
Fesco, you're not going to like this.
Well, let me get out something that I am going to like for a second, because I know you guys are trying to set me up here, okay? I know how this is, all right? You guys are trying to set me up here, aren't you?
No. I just said you're not going to like this.
When the email says, go get him, Bob.
I'm just saying, yesterday you were very offended that Mike Florio implied that the gap between Patrick Mahomes and Kirk Cousins at this very moment isn't as broad as many think. You took that as Kirk Cousins is better than Patrick Mahomes. When I heard this yesterday from Mike Greenberg, I couldn't help but think, oh, man, Bob ain't going like this.
Well, you set me up, but I want to give a quick shout out. We don't do this a lot here on the show. We don't shout out a lot of folks, but I want to shout out the Shawnee Rotary this morning. They're giving a grant to a foundation that I'm part of, Building Hope for Autism, this morning. So I want to shout those good folks out in Shawnee at the Rotary for giving a nice grant out today and doing good things and great things for the Kansas City community and for Building Hope for Autism as well. So thank you to those folks out in Shawnee for presenting a nice little check this morning to our foundation. So thank you, Rotary of Shawnee, for being great folks and doing that. Now you want me to get mad and yell at Mike Greenberg.
Mike Greenberg, ESPN.
Is this your Thanksgiving wish, Ryan?
The best.
I just thought you wouldn't enjoy this when he was talking about
player in the National Football League. Anybody defames Patrick Mahomes.
Just wait for it.
You got to go through. I haven't even heard what he said, and I'm fired up already.
Mike Greenberg, the best player in the NFL is.
Try this today. Ask 10 of your friends, who is the best player in the NFL?
I don't have 10.
And then when none of them gets the answer right, tell them it is Michael Thomas of the New Orleans Saints, who is having, in every way imaginable, the best season by any receiver in
the
100-year history of pro football.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Just stop the tape. Okay. All right.
You don't want to hear his reasoning?
No. I'm gonna butt in here, Greenberg, here for a second. All right. Let me clear the throat here. The old docile tones.
We have a button for that.
We do?
Yeah.
Oh. It's right there on the box.
Is that the one that says cough?
You go. Yeah.
You're giving a wide receiver credit who is reliant on a quarterback and a coach to get him the football.
Listen to his reasons.
You are reliant on a quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback. I know Teddy Bridgewater filled in admirably.
You also
have a very good head football coach down there. And you're in an offense that plays on turf and in a dome. So you're picking a wide receiver who is reliant on others to get him to the football, not a magician and a wonderful human being like Patrick Mahomes.
Teddy Bridgewater started 7 games this year.
Admirably played
Mike
7
Greenberg
games.
Continues.
Thomas is on pace for 150 catches this year, which would be a record. And 0 drops, including playoffs. He's actually recorded 188 receptions since the last time he dropped one, which was week 7 of last year.
Wow, that's pretty spectacular.
This year, he is lapping the field. He has as many catches for a first down this year as Odell Beckham and Stephon Diggs combined. He averages more yards receiving per game than the entire receiving core of the Eagles and the Ravens and the Colts. Mm. He has caught balls this year from Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater, plus 2 from Taysom Hill. When Brees throws the ball to Thomas, the completion percentage is 86%. That is higher than the league average on screen passes, which are essentially glorified handoffs. And then there's Bridgewater. Listen to this. When Bridgewater targets Michael Thomas this year, his QBR is over 95. When he targets everybody else, it is 54. That is equivalent to the difference between Russell Wilson and Mitch Trubisky. So, when the Saints and Panthers play each other on Sunday, and everyone says, you know, if you took out the quarterbacks, Christian McCaffrey would be the league MVP, make sure you tell them you got the right game, but you have named the wrong guy.
Boom.
He didn't mention he only has 5 touchdowns. I conveniently left out the 5 touchdowns, okay? Conveniently left out the fact that he only
Go
has...
Go get him, Bob.
5 because, touchdowns
because
on
they're
the
doing
season.
What you want them to do, which is then run the football.
Conveniently leaving
the Saints
out
then run the football,
that he
which
only
you
has
love.
5 touchdowns.
They play for balance.
Right, right. Yeah, conveniently left out.
He
the
gets
fact
the first downs.
He has 5
and they
touchdowns.
Run it in.
Most of his are just, you know, little slant routes that are easy catches over the middle. They're putting
Jesus.
Him in high percentage situations to achieve success. Well, look,
most of his
Patrick is not going to get MVP this year.
He has 14 and a half. Oh, no, I take that back. 12.1 yards per reception on those little slant routes.
Right, yeah. I mean, you get 12 yards of slant any day, man. It's easy.
Bob's extensive research is
Jesus,
found
Bob.
He's a slant play receiver.
You're not even letting me talk about Patrick Mahomes for a minute here. You're just, like, laughing about this Michael, what was his name again?
Oh, jeez.
Thompson?
Yes.
Theodore?
Michael Thomas.
Mike Thompson, yes.
The weather guy?
Correct.
I knew he retired from Channel 4. Now he's
That's
out there
right.
catching balls.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anybody can do it. Even
put
an old weatherman.
Respect on 12, Michael Thomas is the second coming of Calvin Johnson. Let's just put that out there.
Who?
Okay.
That drop thing that he brought up there, okay, that's pretty damn impressive, right? Like all right, I'll
it's
give you that
week
one.
Week 7 of last year.
But that means in week 6 he had some drops too. But that's pretty darn impressive, right?
Like it was
that,
probably like one.
Hey,
I'm sure
he had 5 drops in week 6 and then nothing since.
Don't drop the ball. It's your job to catch it. You're getting paid a big salary to catch the football.
Jesus.
You get a couple opportunities a game. No, I mean, he's obviously having a great year. The drop thing is pretty darn impressive. Patrick's not going to win MVP this year because – obviously, Patrick has not played the entire season. He's missed basically 3 games because of that injury. And obviously, his numbers aren't where they were, you know, a season ago. But I think, in my opinion, when you start talking about who the best players are in the NFL, I think you have to look at that quarterback position because they are so responsible for your teams having success. Like, we've seen good wide receivers. You mentioned Calvin Johnson over the years. I mean, Calvin Johnson was really good. But at the end of the day, those teams were 8-8 and at best, right, Ryan? I mean, like, they were never really good football teams.
They would have
teams.
Loved 8 wins.
Okay,
about?
Yeah, right. 8-8 at best is what I said,
they
right?
They went 0-16 with Calvin on the roster.
Can you? That's right, they did.
I mean, now you right? have Dan Orlovsky running out of the back of end zone.
Right, but
so.
That's what I'm getting at. Like the we've talked so much since Patrick has become
now
our,
he's super smart because he's on TV.
I mean, yeah, he is, right? Now everybody, oh, look at what Dan Orlovsky's saying. Remember, that guy ran out of the back of the end zone. Like, ESPN should Joe, every time he talks, they should have that highlight of him running out of the end zone like they do with Sanchez in the butt fumble, right? Like, running out of the back of the end zone is a hell of a lot worse than the butt fumble, okay? It just is.
I mean, at least Mark Sanchez was going forward. So.
Correct. Yeah, Dan Orlovsky didn't even know where he was.
Trying to make a play.
right? All right, so Michael Thomas has had a great year, but I think when you talk about...
You have to drop back at least 10 yards to get out of the end zone.
Right, yeah. That guy dropped 11 and a half. I think when you're talking about MVPs and greatest players in the league, I really do believe, unless you're like a Lawrence Taylor type of player on defense, you have to consider the offensive side of the football, and you have to consider that quarterback position before anything else, because they are so responsible for everything that happens out there on the field. Wide receivers go from good to great because of the quarterbacks that they have. Wide receivers go from average to good because of the quarterbacks that they have, and they're able to get them the football. And Michael, I'm not taking anything away from Michael Thomas here.
I'm
trying to say is like you can't overlook the quarterbacks in this league when you're talking about best player. And for my money, when I'm talking about best player in this league, I still believe that it is Patrick Mahomes, because I still believe that when he has the ball and an opportunity to win, no matter where he is, he can get his team in position to win a football
game. I am 100. Number one, who the hell is overlooking quarterbacks and their importance, Bob? Nobody is doing
clearly,
that.
Clearly, Mike Greenberg is.
I am 100% here for a non-quarterback to win the MVP, be it Christian McCaffrey, be it Michael Thomas, whoever the case may be. Like, I'm 100% in favor of that, right? Like, I was in favor of Khalil Mack being up for the award last year.
I think defensive players should get more. When you have a season like Mack did last year, yeah, you should. I think Lawrence Taylor is the last and only, well, no, the last defensive player to win NFL MVP, and before that was like Alan Page won it. Like, I think they're the only two defensive players to win NFL MVP.
It's just, like, I get it. I understand the importance of having a good quarterback, and you obviously need that guy to get over the hump in the modern NFL, but I think that so often we have had just all of these guys that have above and beyond seasons. Like, Michael Thomas is doing something that's transcending his quarterback. He had to play 7 games with Teddy Bridgewater.
The drop thing to me is one of the most spectacular stats I've heard in a long time about any sport.
I mean, we have absolutely seen wide receivers, tight ends, running backs transcend their quarterback in terms of importance on their team. Hell, we saw it with Jamaal Charles here in Kansas City. Like, in terms of importance and value to their team, we have seen guys time and time again transcend the quarterback position, and yet for some reason we get locked in this mode of you have to be a quarterback to be the most valuable or most important or best player currently in the NFL.
We have gotten stuck in that route, though, Ryan. We really have. I think because we've seen the difference, especially here in Kansas City, that a quarterback makes. Let's just take, you know, from Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes, and where Tyreek Hill's game went from when Alex Smith was here to where it is now with Patrick Mahomes here. I mean, Patrick Mahomes.
I get that, Bob, but I would make the argument that look at what Patrick Mahomes' game turns into when he doesn't have a guy like Tyreek Hill out there on the field. Now, sure, he has had some good games with guys like DeMarcus Robinson.
I mean, look at the Raider game. You know, look at the Jacksonville game.
But we've seen, over, especially this last week, and whether you want to chalk it up to field conditions or not, like, the game changed when Tyreek Hill wasn't out there on the field. Can Patrick Mahomes transcend? Sure, he's a great player. He can do that. But he's certainly a better player when he has weapons like Tyreek Hill at his disposal.
I will swaddle Patrick Mahomes with all of my clothes.
I am
and you back
fully
off
aware you will.
Let me gloss some Michael Thomas stats over for a second. Not just the drops.
They're
not just drops,
insane.
Okay?
Yeah.
Here's just the last
5
4
touchdowns.
Weeks.
That's
here's the last 4 weeks. 8 catches, 114 yards, and a touchdown last week. 6 of his 8 catches were for first downs. The week before, 13 catches, 152 yards, 7 of his 13 catches for first downs. The following week, 11 catches on 11 targets, 112 yards, touchdown. 8 of his 11 catches were for first downs.
Why not all 11?
9 for a buck 31, 7 of his 9 catches were for first downs. Guy moves the sticks, too. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's good. He is. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from
him. I'm
always
pissed when a guy can't reach the sticks. This guy, all he does is reach. All he does is give you first
plus
down.
And I think that when we have these conversations too, the vast majority of these conversations, like the one we had yesterday about Mike Florio and the one we're having today about Mike Greenberg, they're not on the whole who's the best. It's at this very moment, right now, this season, as we're playing it right now, who's the best? But
that changes week to week, though. I mean, I think over the
not
long
not for Michael
haul,
Thomas, he hasn't dropped a pass since week 7 of last year.
Well, but it'd be more impressive if it was week 5. but I think we live in that moment of what's going on right now and not realizing this kid transcended the game. He's done stuff in the game that we've never seen before. And because he got a banged up knee this year and they're not as prolific offensively with the 35 points, everybody's like, well, maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't as good as Michael Thomas. No, Patrick Mahomes is the NFL. And that's all I got to say about that.
Jeez.
Are we going to have doting on Bob on doting?
Yeah,
on
let's just, yeah.
Just going to pull that.
Just Mahomes is the NFL. That's it. That's the only thing we need. We've taken care of that edit right on the air. The new guy's in for the Royals. We'll discuss him next.
Fesco in the morning.
Really just like to thank my partner in Cleveland, Paul Dolan. He's been a great partner in the four seasons over there. And I look forward to being his partner for years to come in Major League Baseball. I would echo what the commissioner said, David Glass. He's done a lot for Kansas City, not only being the owner for the last 20 years, but really helping you and Kaufman kind of navigate that transition back in the 90s, which was really important to Kansas City. And then the other thing I'd like to say, I am deeply appreciative of the commissioner's office and my fellow owners for their confidence and trust in the vote today. It's a responsibility that I'll take very seriously. Thank you.
Good night. I'm out.
Goodbye, Kansas City.
Peace out. I got a team. Woo!
Yeah.
John Sherman is the new owner of the Royals. As Major League Baseball owners unanimously approving the sale of the Royals from David Glass to John Sherman yesterday. Sherman will be introduced Tuesday at Kauffman Stadium. News conference you can hear live at noon here on 610 Sports Radio. The financial portion of the transaction expected to be completed next week, but the
banks are closed for the holidays.
That's right. The money will be deposited and transferred at some point next week.
Yeah, then I think PayPal.
Yeah, I think PayPal's.
Do you PayPal that?
Way to go. And then,
John Sherman has a great head of hair, by the way. I don't know if we've had this conversation yet.
What's interesting is, like, you know, do you PayPal or Venmo? And David Glass is probably like, I got to set up a PayPal account for this. All right, transfer it between friends so I don't have to spend money to pay for this thing.
When, like, in sequential bills.
Just Apple Pay it to each other.
Oh, you could Apple Pay. Yeah, just touch phones, and there you go. It changes right then
touch
and there.
The tips of them together.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's a world that we will all never, ever, live in.
They're Bitcoining.
Right? Yeah, Bitcoin. And
he gives them like three of them. That's all it took.
Enron stock or something like that. You know, just whatever it is to make that transfer. But I'm excited about the future of the Royals. I really am. I don't know if you could have found on paper, right, a better owner than what the Royals and what David Glass went out and found to ensure the future of baseball in Kansas City. And that's ultimately what you wanted, because that's what David Glass did. That's what Ewing Kauffman wanted. It's really cool, Josh, and I'll get a little sentimental and a little kind of a, you know, dorky here for a second, but it seems like David Glass is carrying out the wishes of Ewing Kauffman still to this day. Like when he bought the team and saved baseball in Kansas City for the fans of Kansas City, that's why he did that. And now he's turning around, and he could have sold the franchise to somebody from out of town for probably, you know, another $500 million or something like that. I mean, he probably could have got $1.5 billion if he just took the highest bidder for this, but he's still following in Ewing Kauffman's wishes and footsteps of making sure baseball is thriving in Kansas City and that it's a team for the fans of Kansas City. And I think David Glass took less money, obviously, and sold it to somebody from Kansas City to ensure the longevity and long-term baseball in Kansas City, to make sure that this franchise would never move. And now we got a guy that grew up here, that made his money here, that is invested here, that's families here, that kids went to school here. He's a part of a lot of charity foundations and organizations here in Kansas City. Like, you couldn't have on paper found a better person to have this franchise. And I've talked to some people in
Cleveland.
And
by the way, has baseball experience.
Right. And I was going to say, I talked to people in Cleveland who know him, and their reaction was like, you got him? That's awesome. Like, he's a great guy. Like, you will not hear anything to the contrary of John Sherman and people inside the organization that I've spoken to about him. Everybody loves the guy and is excited about what the future is going to hold for this Royals organization. And it's going to be good. And David Glass did the right thing and sold it to a guy that is committed to Kansas City. And I know when the sale was originally announced, what was the first thing we heard from people? They're going to move the franchise? And the answer to that question was no, they're not going to move the franchise, because this is a guy that is 100% committed to Kansas City and has been committed to Kansas City his entire life. And so him having this baseball team here in Kansas City just furthers his commitment and dedication to this town. And I'm excited to see John Sherman run this franchise. I'm excited to be partners with John Sherman from a radio station standpoint and helping them with what they need and making the Royals the best possible product out there, man. It's going to be really, really exciting to see this new kind of generation of Royals baseball and hopefully have another one of those parades like we had in 2015 that blew all of our socks off.
I jokingly call it an internship, but I love, love, love the fact that he was a baseball guy.
Yeah, too, it's almost right? Like David Glass sent him to Cleveland for a few years. Go get your feet wet.
You go to Cleveland for a little bit. Yeah, you got to put in some money and all.
Right.
But go learn the ropes a little bit. And that I think that helps make the transition like so smooth as well.
Sure, I mean, it does.
I don't follow team sales very often, but oftentimes there are multiple groups bidding for a team and what have you. This one was like quiet, under the radar.
Right.
Got a guy who's in baseball already, gets through the, like, it feels like you just knocked out, made it so much easy to have the quick close on your mortgage, right?
Well, the only sale that I've ever really been around and part of is when I was living over in the city across the state called St. Louis. They used to have a football team over there. They were called the Rams at the time. And
vaguely remember.
I've heard of them. They were good.
They weren't. That were when I was there anyway, but they,
I was gonna say,
yeah, though they 99, they were good.
I recall
too.
They may have been the greatest show. What do they call it? On the turf?
No, I think what they're called is the greatest show before Mahomes.
Oh, geez. Keep going. Keep going.
And so Georgia Frontieri was the owner and she passed away and she didn't, you know, like do the right thing and like, you know, skirt the rules. So the kids had to sell the franchise to pay for the tax on the inheritance, right? Like, so stupid. So there was like the bidding war. Shad Khan, you know, the owner of the Jags, was involved, and then all of a sudden Stan Kroenke and his mustache came riding in at the last minute and, you know, purchased the team.
Did Khan have that mustache at the time?
He did
too?
Oh god, yes.
So there were competing stashes.
Yeah, competing stashes. Yeah. Wow. it was the stash
based
battle.
On that, I don't know stash how Khan off. Lost this thing.
Yeah, but, well, because Stan Kroenke had final right of refusal because he was the minority owner at the time, and so, you know, Khan could put in his bid and then Stan Kroenke
he could
you know, bid it up by a dollar and ultimately win it. And that was the only sale that I've been around. And I don't know if that was ugly, but it was just kind of like messy with all the, you know, the legal stuff that went on with that. And you knew that franchise was for sale, obviously, in St. Louis. Here in Kansas City, I mean, you always thought that David Glass would eventually sell the franchise because that's what happens, you know. But we didn't know when, we didn't know how, we didn't know where. You know, the details were very quiet throughout this whole thing. And I told you guys, you know, the one thing that I had heard is that my neighbor, my friend, his neighbors was Dan Glass. And he called me and go, Dan Glass put his house up for sale. I'm like, yeah, we hear that all the time. But then, you know, a couple weeks later, boom, it happened. And so it was really just kind of kept quiet the entire time. And it just happened. And that's why, you know, they did it the right way. And the way that the Glass family ran this franchise, the way that they passed off this franchise, very Ewing Kaufman-like. And we should be very lucky that David Glass did what he did and sold it to this guy to ensure baseball in Kansas City forever and a day. And for that, we have to be, you know, indebted to. And I think he did a very nice job of stewarding this franchise and passing it off to a guy who we couldn't have handpicked a better owner than what we have in John Sherman right now with his ties to Kansas City.
Again, Sherman will be introduced at Tuesday noon at Kauffman Stadium. We'll have it for you live here on 610 Sports Radio as the new owner of the Royals becoming official at the Major League Baseball owners meetings yesterday down in Texas. But John Sherman officially now the new owner of the Kansas City Royals. If I were him too, I wouldn't wear a suit like ever again. I'm just wearing gear. Like that's my team.
I don't think you can as the owner. I think you have to be buttoned
you can
up.
Do whatever the hell you want as an owner.
I'm sure there are goofy rules like that, but I just be like, I'll have all the gear, please. Yeah.
Like, will you
Mark Cuban this up, man? Like ride on the team plane with them.
Would you? Yeah, you don't want the owner around.
The hell I don't.
Why?
Because I want an owner like that. I want an owner who loves the team as much as the fans.
And then every meal is in a helmet. That's what I'm doing as the owner.
I mean, no disrespect to David Glass. I want an owner who doesn't just show up when you have a trophy.
I don't need the owner around.
I mean, you win a trophy and you show up and you talk about losings for losers and then you leave. No, I don't want that.
Gear up, eat a lot of cheese, and everything's eaten out of the helmet.
What do you want the owner to do, though? Like do you just want to see him wave?
I want him to
booth?
See him down there in the Crown Club eating nachos out of a helmet.
Yeah, they sit in a suite up high, though. So you want him down in the Crown Club eating nachos and a helmet?
100% I want him to do that.
I would hate to have you as the owner.
I want the camera to pan over to him, and I want to see him chug a beer. Like, that's what I
want
to see.
That's what you want.
Why? What's so wrong with that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but that doesn't make you a better owner or anything like that.
I think that it resonates with fans. I think that you go, wow, the owner cares about this team as much as we do. We don't have to question it because we don't know where the hell you are sitting in your ivory tower until you win a championship.
David Bakhtiari.
And then ascend from down high. Losing's for losers.
Sits courtside and just pounds beers.
Nah.
I would definitely.
I'm good with a classy, silent owner like
I would
we
definitely
have.
Casual classy it up, though. I'm not a soup person anyway.
John Sherman, I know you don't need the money, but if you're down for it, your first helmet nacho is on me. Just come on down.
Are you getting the brisket achos?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
And you don't know what? If you like, we'll go sit out in left field. We'll go Gordo Nation night. It'll be terrific.
You buy his ticket?
Yeah, why not?
Better have cheese on his shirt.
We can get
media
comps for that, right? At
8:15, your chance to win Smokehouse Barbecue. We chat with former NFL linebacker Joe Mays, who drops by next.
Fesco in the morning.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.